Coming up on Tech News Today, Motorola getting behind the whole modular phone idea. Google might mass produce its own smartwatches. At least that's what the Wall Street Journal thinks. And Netflix says we'd like to have movies in the theater and on Netflix the same day. Are they crazy? We'll talk about it next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, October 29th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at Gazelle.com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT10. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason L.
And this is the show that takes the tech news of the day and orders it up from top to bottom, most important to so also kind of important. And we start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news. Motorola announced it will partner up with Dave Hawkins Phone Blocks community to make a modular smartphone a reality. Project Ara will be a free open hardware platform, which Motorola says is intended to do for hardware what Android did for software. A modular phone would allow the user to replace parts of the phone like the screen or camera without replacing the entire device. Motorola will begin inviting developers in a few months, hopes to have a developer's kit out sometime this winter.
The whole Google smartwatch thing is seeming pretty real. The latest whispers point to a launch as early as next year, if the Wall Street Journal's contacts are correct, because development on the wearable devices has apparently reached the point where it could be ready for mass production within months. And Google is said to have already started talks with Asian manufacturers. This is according to anonymous sources. But bundle that in with some patents and some acquisitions earlier this year, which are both fact, and the Google Watch seems like less of a rumor all the time.
Amazon's Matchbook service is now live. Now, if you forgot, Matchbook lets you purchase discounted digital versions of physical books you bought on Amazon. Amazon says Matchbook is available for over 70,000 books, with more titles to be added in the future.
Apple reported $7.5 billion in profit on $37.5 billion in revenue. Down from $8.2 billion in profit last year, but up over $36 billion in revenue the year before. Apple broke sales records, including 33.797 million iPhones sold. That's up over 26.91 million last year. But profit margins continued to shrink from 40% a year ago to 37%. Mac sales outpaced iPod sales for the first time since iPods ever.
Yep. Nokia's Q3 2013 financial results are also in and show an operating profit of $162 million from $7.8 billion in revenue. Now, that's a big gain year over year. It's also interesting because this report is the first since Microsoft agreed to purchase Nokia's phone business. And that division, devices and services, performed as expected and actually posted a small loss of $118 million. Now, if you take the phone business and put it aside, Nokia's overall revenue was $3.8 billion, and it made $280 million in profit, which could be good for a post-phone future if we're entering one.
According to Strategy Analytics, Samsung shipped the most smartphones for the third quarter of this year. More than 250 million smartphones were shipped worldwide. And from all the smartphones, Samsung moved 88 million of them. If you're curious, Apple shipped over 33 million iPhones.
In a speech hosted by Film Independent, Netflix chief content officer Ted Sarandos suggested Netflix would like to get into making big movies, not just documentaries, and premiere them in theaters the same day as they're available on Netflix. To do that, he'd need theater owners on his side. And Sarandos said in his speech, quote, "As theater owners try to strangle innovation and distribution, not only are they going to kill theaters, they might kill movies." So I guess Netflix is going to have to buy the theaters at this point.
People who own a Moto X might have noticed something that looks like a little red sombrero on their home screens. if they have tapped the sombrero that they know, the Moto X kind of turns into a player for computer animation and street theater. Windy Day is the name of this production. It came from Motorola's in-house Moonshot division, Advanced Technology and Products. The research group, which started in May 2012, shares the high ambitions of Google's own long-term research project, Google X. This is a new type of storytelling that Motorola calls Spotlight Stories.
Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff, who, by the way, is facing re-election next year, is pressing lawmakers in Brazil to vote this week on a law requiring internet companies to store data obtained from Brazilians in servers located inside Brazil. The bill comes in response to reports that the United States spied on Brazilians, including President Rousseff herself.
Microsoft issued its security intelligence report and found 21% of users are still using Windows XP. Now, Microsoft will cease to provide security updates to XP in April 2014. Windows XP users are almost six times more likely to get malware infections compared to Windows 8 users. On the plus side, Microsoft announced its remote desktop app for Android and iOS has been downloaded 1 million times in 117 days, making it the most popular Microsoft app on Android. Hilariously, still no word on when the app may come to Windows Phone.
It will, I think. One day. Yeah, someday. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. If you're thinking about getting that new iPad Air or maybe a new iPhone, Gazelle wants to buy your old one. Your used iPhone, your iPad, any smartphone, actually. You can lock in your price today and send it to Gazelle when you get your new one because Gazelle's offer is good for 30 days. Gazelle makes selling your used gadgets fast and simple. Go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find your item. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Then get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and free shipping. They'll even send you a box sometimes. You'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. So don't wait. It's not like the products get more valuable over time. Lock in that 30-day price. It's risk-free. And then when you get your new device, you can send them the old one. They'll even promise to wipe the hard drive for you. Offer's good for 30 days. Gives you time to transfer that data and set up your new device. What's your iPhone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. Do it now because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. Gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now, very happy to have the co-founder of Technical Illusions, the creator of Cast AR. You probably heard about it. Jerry Ellsworth joins us. How's it going, Jerry?
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for getting up early and joining us.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I'm so tired.
There's sun out. What's that about?
I'm not a morning person.
We got an interesting wearable tech report out that I think gives us a chance to talk a little more about Cast AR and its future. But let's start off with this Project Aura. Motorola announced that it partnered. Well, it's announced Project Aura, and then because phone blocks, Dave Hawkins' thing already existed out there as a thunderclap project, which is trying to get people interested in the idea. Motorola did the right thing and said, hey, we're going to bring him on board. We're going to work with that community because this is going to be an open platform. And if you don't remember, we talked about phone blocks a while back on Tech News Today. The idea is that you have an endoskeleton. You have a little breadboard type thing. It looks more like a platform in the Project Aura pictures. And then modules plug into it. You can plug a screen on one side. You have a module for your Wi-Fi, module for your Bluetooth, module for your battery. That way, you want to change the battery, you just pull off the module. You want to upgrade to a new Wi-Fi standard at some point, you just pull off the module, put the new thing in. You don't have to update the whole phone at once. And Jerry, you work with hardware like this a lot. You work with hardware a lot, maybe not exactly like this. But as a hardware designer, what do you think of this idea? Is this doable?
I think it's a nightmare, to tell you the truth.
Yeah?
Yeah, if you just look at the constant changing landscape of interfaces between all of your peripherals and mechanically, if you're popping these things in and out all the time, you know, what if you drop your phone? You're going to have to go chase your Wi-Fi module across the floor.
It's the Lego effect, right? Just shattered across the kitchen floor. I think the idea is attractive, right? The idea of like, oh, I can upgrade something without having to replace the whole phone. But can that be cost effective? That's one of my other questions.
I'm kind of skeptical of it, really. I mean, there's a lot of added costs to it. You have to have all these connectors. Each of those connectors is a potential for problems. And then from a manufacturer standpoint, someone gets a little bit of lint in one of their connectors for their Wi-Fi module. Now it's a support issue. How are they going to deal with people that are having issues with that? But yeah, it is a very attractive idea. I mean, almost every place I've worked, we've talked about making things modular.
Theoretically, this sounds like a great idea. It reminds me of like PCs where you'd be able to put parts in, take them out, be able to take care of this. But because these are portable devices, the concept, Jerry, you mentioned of dropping your device and having the parts everywhere, that's one issue. And the other thing is when it comes to the speed at which these things change, the parts, to get them miniaturized and to be in a swappable kind of body, the amount of time it would take to make that happen versus just simply changing out the whole board, it just seems like it would slow down a lot of faster processes.
Exactly. In cell phones, you already have limited real estate on the circuit boards, and to burn up that real estate with just unnecessary interconnects and connectors and stuff like that, and ESD protection to keep you from static zapping it. I suspect that you're probably going to be behind the curve constantly on the technology, just because you don't have as much space to jam as much stuff in there.
I will say one possible good thing about the fact that it breaks off into a million pieces if you drop it would be this, similar to phones that have a removable battery. If it drops, the battery pops out and it removes, and it kind of, in some ways, kind of cushions the fall, right? Instead of it being like a solid brick that goes, yes, so there's that. You have to go chasing the pieces, but at least maybe they all still work, maybe.
We need crumple zones on our phones.
Yes, exactly.
You're right.
As a hacker maker perspective, I absolutely love the idea, but my product side is coming through, and so I might seem a little negative, but really inside I gush for these kinds of things.
Well, yeah, no, I think we all do. We all want it to work, right? We love the idea. And I think Motorola is doing it right by making it an open hardware platform. And maybe somebody will crack the code and figure out some things none of us have thought of to make this work. You know, folks in the chat room are saying, well, you put a case around it. Yeah, it's going to be a little heavier, but that's a cost-benefit analysis that the purchaser will do. I definitely think that it will lead to further charges of fragmentation. But he dropped it. Never mind. Let's talk about another Google project that's in the worst. This one's more of a rumor, not an official announcement. Wall Street Journal reporting Google getting into the watch business, Sarah.
Yeah, not only that, but that Google is in late stage development in talks with suppliers over in Asia to possibly begin mass production of a device that nobody has seen yet, but would be some sort of a wearable wrist device. This is according to anonymous sources speaking to the Wall Street Journal. So yes, their sources are good, but we don't know exactly who's saying this. What we do know from the sources is it would run Android. It would be integrated with Google Now. In fact, specifically, it would be based on recommendations that would help you predict what you want to do next and what information you would like served up to you based on what Google Now can take from your activities and your emails and that sort of thing. Supposedly, Google is working on reducing power consumption on a smartwatch. That's something that pretty much all entries thus far, there's an issue of battery life and, of course, of just high costs of a product like this. But it could be ready for mass production, conceivably, within months. We had the Galaxy Gear watch from Samsung. You could sort of say that Samsung got there first, but I haven't heard many good things about it. People say it's expensive and clunky and it doesn't really do anything that you can't do other ways. Jerry, what do you think? I mean, is we've got Google Glass, and that's not right for everybody. Do you think that Google has a slam dunk in the works with something that you wear on your wrist instead?
Again, I think it might be a hard sell. I've done some research in this area where you do galvanic skin response, where you're measuring people's emotional state through their skin resistance. You can have a lot of sensors really close to your skin, and it solves that that issue of being able to monitor what people are doing. It's always in contact with your skin. However, when you look at it from a product standpoint, it's got to do something pretty spectacular for people to, like, when I put this watch on, I want to say, oh my God, it does this wonderful thing for me. And all of my experiments with like galvanic skin response, it's such a subtle thing. You can't, it just doesn't really show up as a user experience.
I think that the Google Now part of this is probably the best bet for this becoming interesting, right? And yeah. And there was one example in one of the stories I read, and it might have been the Wall Street Journal, about running through the airport And Google now knows, because it's scanning everything you do, it's your own personal little NSA, that you're in an airport, you're running to catch a plane, and that plane has been delayed. And the watch beeps, and you look down, it's like, hey, your flight's been delayed, 20 minutes, slow down. You don't need to be running, buddy. And you're like, that kind of thing could be helpful.
I think the instant display available to you that you can just flip up and look at is very attractive.
Every time, for those kinds of alerts, especially, right?
If Google Now works really well with your device, or if it's its own, on its own device, a standalone, that'd be great. But the big thing that I found is an issue for any of these wearable computing devices is simply battery life. If you're going to have a watch on you, the reason why I own this watch particularly is because it has a battery that just doesn't die. It's kinetic, so it'll keep going forever. All my other watches die. If I had a Fitbit, it would die. It's this constant thing of having to have a device that you have to wear and keep charging. I know people can get in the habit of doing that with their phones every night, but to say, okay, did you plug in your glass, and did you plug in your watch, and did you plug in your phone every night? Unless wireless charging was really, really like on board now, where you can just put everything on one table, it just seems like that's going to be the barrier no matter what, because it could tell you everything, but if it's dead, it's of no use.
It's tricky. It's tricky designing things that have emissive displays that are transmitting light and wireless networks, trying to keep the power down on those things. And you're right. I think anything they come up with is probably going to require frequent recharging. And
I think by the end of next year, probably should save this for our prediction show at the end of this year, but I think we'll have a half dozen watches to choose from. We already have the Galaxy Gear, obviously, and there's the Pebble and a few others. But I think there will be a big watch lineup, and it'll be very interesting to see how many of those can be sustained, how many of them are really capturing people's imagination. I mean, Galaxy Gear has great commercials. I'm not sure how much it's captured the imagination yet.
Yeah. If that's the best thing you can say about it, I don't think it's a successful product.
It's right. Yeah, and actually, I can't remember if it's 30 or 40% return rate on the Galaxy Gear.
Yeah, no.
Which tells you not doing so hot. So.
All right, Ted Sarandos saying crazy things. He doesn't say them in a very crazy way. They sound very reasonable when he says them, Ayaz.
He was giving a keynote speech over at Film Independent Forum, and why should I say it? I'm not going to do the quote. Hey, Jason, you got the video ready for this?
I do. Hold on.
Ted Sarandos explaining what he's going to do for movies.
That's right. Here we go.
What we're trying to do for TV, the model should extend pretty nicely to movies. Meaning that why not premiere movies on Netflix the same day they're opening in theaters? And not little movies. There's a lot of people and a lot of ways to do that. But why not big movies? Why not follow what the consumers desire to watch things when they want? Especially that instead of spending millions, tens of millions of dollars to advertise to people who may not even live near a theater, and then make them wait for 4 or 5 months before they can ever see it. They'll probably get to forget.
Yeah, so that was at the keynote at Film Independent Forum. Now, a bunch of companies have actually successfully had movies running at the same time as it's been in theaters. Amazon, Apple, Time Warner Cable. These have been the smaller independent ones. Jerry, do you think Netflix can actually get a big movie, something like let's say Avengers 2, something like that, on Netflix?
Oh, that's in a space that I'm not familiar with, but that's what I would want to do. I don't want to go to the theater anymore. It's like travel agencies. I don't want to go to a travel agency anymore. I just want to do it online. I have a nice big theater set up at home, so just watch it there in comfort.
We have a travel agent down the street from me, actually, and I look at them with awe and wonder. You know, it's like seeing something in amber from an ancient time. Like, I guess people still use them. Not sure why. But yeah, I'm like you. I would like this option as well. Netflix knows we all want this option. The theater owners are not going to go along with this. And as I mentioned in the news fuse, Ted had some rather undiplomatic things to say about theater owners strangling distribution. So he's not trying to win them over. Netflix would have to commission the movie. They'd have to get a studio on board to make the movie for Netflix. And then they'd have to figure out distribution for this to work. There's no way they're going to take Avengers 2 and put it on Netflix. Nobody is going to agree to that. If Netflix were to create the movie, And sort of like House of Cards, be a big name movie with a big name director, big stars in it, I still don't know how they would get it shown, because the theater owners are not going along with day and date for any big studio as it is. They're very firm on the windowing. They're resisting any reduction in the amount of time something's in the theaters before it goes to on demand. So I just don't see how Netflix gets this done.
Yeah, that windowing system just refuses to die. Sometimes we see these ideas of what if they charge $50 for in-home distribution of video on the same day the theater and limits to like 10 days, all these little tiers and things. I think that might be something Netflix would even look into. Obviously, their big proposition has been you pay a flat rate, you get all the video you want. I would think for something like this to get a big movie and a big studio on board, if Netflix wasn't commissioning it themselves, they'd have to start charging a lot of money. There's no way they can do it for $8 a month.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I know that we talk about this every once in a while, and you know, especially if somebody's a parent, they'll say, you know what, $50 is worth it. If I could have a movie that all the kids want to see and we don't have to leave the house, that's good to go. But, I mean, to me, that sounds totally ridiculous, and it probably still wouldn't work, even if you had to charge customers exorbitant prices just to be able to watch a movie via Netflix in their living room rather than go to the theater. I just don't see how this plays out, even though, sure, maybe inevitably we're moving towards that sort of a model where it's all up to you as the consumer, and it just depends on how much you're willing to pay for convenience. But yeah, I think there's just too much pushback with how movies, first run movies, work right now in theaters.
There's a device called the Prima Cinema. It's $35,000 for the box. And if you want to watch a movie,
that's about a steak in them.
What was that?
IMAX just bought a stake in Prima.
Oh, IMAX. I thought you said you did. I was like, how? Each movie's $500, and you can $500 to watch a movie that's first run right now. And that's, again, if you bought the device for $35,000. So I don't know how Netflix would be like, yeah, we can do that for $8. $35,000.
All right. I honestly think the only way Netflix gets this done is to buy out the theaters. I don't think they actually buy theaters, but they would have to tell the theater owners, we will buy all the tickets. You will make the receipts, like we'll pay you. And again, that's going to drive up the cost of something that's already incredibly expensive, $75, $80 million to make a big movie. And as I has pointed out, at $8 a month, I'm not sure how that all makes sense. But, you know, Ted's speaking off the cuff. Maybe he's just trying to stir the pot like they were when they said they were going to have Netflix available on cable set-top boxes. I'll take a quick break and thank our sponsor for today's show, Squarespace, the constantly improving platform. It's funny, every once in a while I go into Squarespace and something just got easier. I'm updating my book site and I realize, wait a minute, that took fewer steps. Where'd that come from? Because they're always working on it. They're always adding new designs. They just added 20 more beautiful templates recently. And that's what Squarespace is good about. You don't have to hunt around and modify a template. Maybe some of you like to do that, but most of you probably don't. Squarespace is the easiest way to do this. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Support is there if you need it. And it starts at just $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And those of you who are like, well, I'm a businessman, Tom. You know, these Squarespace may be great for your bloggers out there, but I sell things for a living. I make things for a living that I sell. You can do that on Squarespace. They're commerce ready, integrated to work with every Squarespace template. Whether you're selling toys or physical devices that you've created or just the plans for them, if you're uploading some CAD templates you want to sell, you can do it all on Squarespace. Global reach, US, UK, Canada, Australia, Belgium, France, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, and Spain, all included. So start a trial today. You don't have to give them a credit card or anything. Just start building up the website. You'll see how easy it is. You'll see how good it looks. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT10 to get 10% off and to show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. SoundCloud is increasingly becoming what it wants to become, the YouTube of audio for the internet.
Yeah, it's growing. Over at TechCrunch Disrupt Europe, which is happening in Berlin, where SoundCloud is based, the co-founder and CEO, Alexander Zhang, was speaking to some folks over at TechCrunch and just kind of had some interesting things to say about their business and being in Berlin and how they've grown. Back in July, SoundCloud announced it had reached 200 million active listeners. So that's people who are listening on a monthly active user basis. Since then, since July, the company has grown to 250 million listeners. So that's really impressive growth in less than 6 months. They announced that as a SoundCloud user, you can now integrate with your Instagram account. So it allows things like you can use Instagram photos as album art, that sort of thing. So it's a nice little integration. Just the two companies working more closely together. And then they've also revamped their premium subscriptions. Zhang said, you know, making money is important to us and subscriptions are important to us, but actually user growth we enjoy more user growth when we just have fewer options for paying members. So that's what they've done there. And then he talks a little bit about just the Berlin startup scene. It's something that, you know, I keep hearing about, but when I hear about the Berlin startup scene, people say things like, yeah, it's really kind of getting crazy over there. There are a lot of startups, you know, like SoundCloud. And that's sort of the company that you always hear as the example and not really that many others. Zhang says, for example, in the VC arena, he says there's not really a lot of VCs, meaning venture capitalists, who want to invest in startup companies. But he says a couple years ago, people would say, we only invest in the Valley. And you don't hear that anymore. And he says, you know, it's important to make sure that innovation is happening worldwide and that you've got some cultural studies where you see how something like SoundCloud not only works for people around the world, but really in the market where it comes from. What do you think, Jerry? I mean, do you feel like there are burgeoning startup scenes in other places? Does Berlin stand out to you as something special?
I've actually been to a hacker makerspace / startup place in Berlin. It was in an old World War II bunker. It was very fascinating environment of creative people coming together. So this bunker is only like one story above ground, but it was maybe three or four stories below ground. And you go in and there's all these different little startups in there doing crazy stuff. They even let me spray paint the wall with a can of spray paint, which I lit the spray and just wrote my name on the wall.
That's awesome.
Very cool scene over there. That was quite a few years ago. I haven't been over in a while, but yeah, it's exciting seeing these different startup kind of incubators all over the world, and it's moving away from Silicon Valley.
And I like how SoundCloud has taken a very conservative and slow but open approach to growth. They've never just been like, we're going to try to boost users up artificially and crazily. They've always tried to make money off it, but they're also noticing like, okay, there's some barriers to adoption with our subscription plan, so let's try to simplify things. They've made it very easy for podcasters. They've really embraced podcasting, and they have good tracking now. They have ways to create feeds that are very podcaster-friendly. And I think they're really finally kind of... It's like I feel like they're a submarine that's slowly been, you know, surfacing, and they're now just starting to break the waters.
I'm just glad that they exist. I remember when Odeo was around. That was the thing I used to use, and then they died off. This one, Evan Williams' projects, and it died off because I think there was just a lack of support behind the scenes. And so that went away. SoundCloud shows up, and as a user, I use SoundCloud a lot. It's very, very powerful, good tools for free. There's nothing about it that makes it seem, what's the word? They're not trying to trap you. It doesn't ever feel like you're getting stuck in their little universe. So I'm just glad they're around.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. All right, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about Samsung. And we've been watching this happen in slow motion over the years, and the trend for Samsung to try to put things over the top of Android, not just in the HTC Touch sense, but also in the sense of like, we'd like to have our own app store. We'd like to forget that Android's even there. Interesting article today about this, IaaS. Tell us about it.
Yeah, because Samsung had its first developers conference yesterday. They introduced 5 SDKs so the developers can make apps for Samsung products. They had about 1,300 developers in attendance. So of the 5 SDKs, there's a multi-screen SDK that lets you send video and websites from your phone to the TV. Samsung's big pull is the fact that they are the number one TV seller in the world, and they have been for a number of years at this point. That multi-screen SDK launches on November 12th. It's also going to support phone input from various devices, including iPhones, but it always needs a Samsung Smart TV at the other end for this to work. Multi-screen gaming SDK, you could use your smartphone as a console. That's one of the options you'll have. Samsung's also working with Unity technology for a multi-screen gaming SDK. There's a mobile SDK which supports Samsung's Pen, Gestures, Multi-Window, and Motion features. So if people wanted to build apps special for things like the Note, they would be able to do that. There's an Enterprise SDK and a Smart TV SDK as well. Jared, do you see developers actually building out applications for Samsung at the detriment of Android?
I think all these companies are really trying to get into digital distribution, and having worked at Valve Software and seeing the inside of a company that makes piles of gold from digital distribution. So that's very much on their mind. I also see it seems like maybe they're trying to solve a huge problem with their TVs, with what you mentioned, having the multi-screen and the connection between the TVs. It's been I worked on projects where we were trying to do smart TVs, and the TVs are so competitive, you can't put enough computing power into them. And now maybe there's a way we could do this with our smartphones. So maybe it's a smart move on their part to bring the computing into your phone or your tablet devices.
Yeah, I think that's what they're doing. I think they're saying, hey, we've got televisions, right? Let's figure out how to incorporate that. At the same time, maybe our televisions aren't as popular or as functional as we'd like them to be. Maybe some of those Android developers could throw a little juice that way and do some things to spice up that world. And obviously Samsung, you know, with Tizen experimentation and other things, has been indicating that they would really like to be in control of their own operating system. They've benefited very much from being on Android. They're not ready to go the full Amazon and just go to the source code and build off of that entirely. But they would like you to sort of forget that it's Google behind that. I think we continue to see Samsung doing sort of a hybrid approach, IaaS, where we have Android below, we have all the Google apps, and they sign the deal and all of that. But Samsung is increasingly pointing you towards their own stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if Samsung is strong enough to do something like what Amazon did by forking it completely and saying, look, you don't get Gmail, you don't get Google Play, we have our own stores. I know that Samsung's working on those kinds of things to have app stores. They have that chat on application. If they wanted to replace something like Hangouts, they've got over 100 million users worldwide for chat on. I know I've made fun of it a number of times. I had no idea that 100 million people on board already when it comes to those things. But yeah, I think you're right, Tom. I think they just don't seem like they want to go into the business of pushing Google aside. They've been working with Google on and off with the Nexus devices at times. I think the Nexus 10 tablet's out right now is a Samsung. They probably want to keep that relationship quite strong. So they can't just throw out Google entirely, but they will continue with all their other options like Tizen, even Windows Phone, which they kind of give some lip service to.
Yeah, I'm actually reviewing the current Note 10.1. I think it's the 2014 edition. And I can't tell you how many times I turn on the tablet and try and get to Gmail, and I have to go searching for the Gmail icon because where they put it is not where you'd expect to find it, not even in the apps list. It's on the side pullout thing. So it is kind of the best of both worlds from Samsung's perspective. They still give you those valuable Google services, which many people correlate with Android directly and expect to have on those devices, but they also really want to steer you towards their own services. I don't see them breaking away from Google anytime soon.
All right, let's finish off talking a little bit about wearable computing. There's that report from the Economist Business Intelligence Unit out today, sponsored by ARM, but touting the Internet of Things. Of course, ARM would like you to build an Internet of Things because ARM makes chips that just work nicely within the Internet of Things. So they'll sell more chips if you do that. And of course, with Jerry on the show, wanted to talk a little bit about Cast AR. I always wanted to just plow right through the AR. I apologize for that. Our audience has seen this, very excited about it, and the fact that it's, you know, the ability to kind of play that holographic chess from Star Wars in real time. But you guys have not only been funded, you're after some stretch goals. Tell us a little bit about what else you're going to do with this.
Yeah, so we launched a Kickstarter maybe 15 days or so, and we blew right through our funding goal in 53 hours. So we're very, very happy about that.
Good job.
It's been a lot of work. We worked a very long time to develop the tech. And so some of our new stretch goals that we're going for is we're going to add some microphones to the headset so that you can use the device with people playing remotely easier. We're going to have audio playback, positional audio. A lot of our focus is now on raising funds so that we can get support for drivers and applications. So Rick, we just met one of our stretch goals to what was it? It wasn't the video player.
Put it up on screen.
It was the dungeon. The dungeon stamper.
For the RFID tracking grid or the magic one.
Yeah, yeah. So you can play Dungeons and Dragons with your friends across the world. And then beyond that, it's going to be more driver support. We just got the drivers going, so you can play all the AAA first-person shooters in VR mode. And then beyond that, we're going to do more board gaming type and tabletop gaming experiences.
Now, obviously, this is the first generation of a pretty exciting project. You've talked a little about, like, down the road making it wireless. You've talked about the idea of, like, blanking a whole room in the mats so you could create sort of a holodeck. What do you see as the second or third gen of this being?
Okay, so right now, when we started this project, we wanted to have a kick-ass experience in the living room, or in a confined space. Instead of trying to walk around the world like Google Glass and having kind of mediocre game experience, we really refined it so we could have a really good game experience in a localized space. So as we move forward, we're going to continue working on our vision chip that detects the world around you so that we can bust out of the living room. We're going to work on optics similar to Google Glass, where it's near-to-eye displays so that you don't need to use the retroreflective surface and you'll be able to just interact with stuff in the real world. There's a long ways to go for all wearable headset display manufacturers to actually achieve that. When you start talking about near to eye displays where you're putting light directly into your eyes, it's not always a great experience. You have to worry about focusing each pixel at different depths. You have to make sure that it can accommodate each person's eye spacing. And those are all solvable things, but it's going to take quite a bit of miniaturization to push that forward.
Well, ARM is promoting their Freescale Kinetis KL02 small, cheap microcontroller in this report that I read today. I don't know if that's small enough for you. Do you guys work with anything like that?
We do use microcontrollers in our design and embedded processors. However, to do things that look like they're grounded in reality, you got to have a lot of horsepower. So modern cell phones with 3D GPUs can do it. Really lightweight embedded processors probably aren't going to do it for a while. There's not much incentive for the chip manufacturers to put 3D graphics processors in something that's designed to run your refrigerator or something on the Internet of Things. They just want some processing power there and some kind of networking capability.
Yeah, and this is wearable, but do you consider it an Internet of Things-like device at even down the road sometime?
Well, absolutely. Everything is heading that direction, whether we like it or not. It's going to be more connected. There's a lot of pros and cons of being constantly connected to the internet, sending metrics back and forth and notifications like we talked about before. So our product is one of those slices of the Internet of Things that is going to provide information and take metrics from what you're doing and help you have a better life. In theory.
No disrespect to Google Glass, but yours looks a lot better on people's faces too, at least at this point.
Here we go. This is our mock-up of where we're headed for the size, and this is actually very realistic for
Yeah,
so the glasses, there's two projectors on top that project out to the retroreflective surface, and that generates the holographic images. And then we also have a clip-on that makes it more like a Google Glass. It sends the two images directly to your eyes. But Google Glass is just a mono monocular system. Ours is stereo, so everything can fly around, pop up, and look like it's flying towards your face.
I'll go ahead and just interject real quick. I was here when Jerry was here for the triangulation episode with Leo, and I got a chance to put on the glasses and take them for a spin, and it was pretty remarkable. Just the perspective that you could get on the surface, and Jerry told me to kind of duck down and look out on the horizon, and you saw kind of the perspective of the buildings change and, I can see over that building now to what's behind it. It was really, really impressive. Cool stuff.
All right. So the project continues until November 14th. Keep an eye on those stretch goals. You can find it at Kickstarter, Technical Illusions, or search for Cast AR. And when I pronounce it right, it helps you know how to spell it. C-A-S-T AR. Really quickly, before we move on to the randomizer, a lot of folks were very excited about a Google Plus event that was being streamed today. I think because they thought maybe a KitKat or Nexus 5 announcement might slip in there. They're still going on, but so far nothing like that. There are some interesting things there, since so many people were interested in what Vic Gundotra was talking about. SMS now integrated into the Hangouts app. In fact, a lot of people thought that was going to be coming with KitKat, so that's been announced for Hangouts as well. They also announced some new features for Hangouts on Air, including the ability to plan a future Hangout. So you can have a landing page to point people to, like, hey, on Thursday we're going to be doing this Hangout. You can get that link out there so people know where to find you. Ways to allow users in an active Hangout so you can bring people in and out, flipping the switch on HD full screen video calls across all devices, and some auto correction features. So some nifty stuff in there if you're one to keep an eye on Google Plus. Let's move on to the randomizer. Today is Len Peralta's birthday. Today is also, was it National Cat Day, Sarah?
That's right, Tom. National Cat Day. Happy National Cat Day to everybody.
So our straw poll today is a referendum on Len Peralta or kittens. It was Uber delivering adoptable kittens to your doorstep with 38%. But Len Peralta's new project, commission Len Peralta to draw anything you want on a real piece of paper, got 62% of the vote. It's at peraltartsy.myshopify.com. If those of you don't know, Len's the guy who comes on Fridays and illustrates the stories we're talking about. He's doing Year of the Commission. So for $50, he's going to do 365 pieces of art. He's going to work on one a day for 365 days. Original black and white pen and ink drawings on 5x7 archival smooth Bristol board. So this is real world stuff. Because he's an entirely digital artist now. And he's like, I wanted an excuse to get back to pen and ink and do that. So check it out. peraltartsy.myshopify.com. And wish Len a happy birthday while you're checking it out.
And it's like he's giving you a gift on his birthday.
It is. Well, kind of. He needs $50 for
Yeah,
it,
so. but you get a collectible piece of art.
Heavily discounted. Right. I mean, the digital pieces are about $300 to $400.
Yeah.
This is an actual piece that he's touched. Not like a digital version of it. This is a lens of...
Well, because he only has to make one. When you make all those digital copies, as the music and television industry has taught us, it's millions of dollars.
Yeah, Len draws it each time as digital. It's true.
Right. All right, let's check out the calendar. What's happening, Sarah?
Well, there's quite a few things happening on the calendar. You can download Firefox 25 for Windows, Mac, and Linux right now. Today's the official launch. Also, today is Dell's last day as a public company. The company obviously announced the closing of that $25 billion go private transaction. So Dell shares to cease trading on the NASDAQ exchange at the close of business today in New York. Kind of a big deal. GamesBeat conference starts today in Redwood City, runs through tomorrow. This is a VentureBeat franchise that focuses on gaming. Tomorrow, Facebook is announcing its earnings. And also tomorrow, the Dublin Web Summit starts, runs through the 31st.
To the emails.
Incoming message.
We got lots of messages all over the place. So a lot of folks were interested about the Aero fitness health tracker and if it can track what you eat by just being on your wrist. Now, Trent wrote in to mention Body Media. They make a product called Body Media Fit, and it can automatically track calorie burn, and it's a wearable. Will wrote in about someone he knows who's working on building a blood monitor based on optical measurement. That device would clip to a thumb. And at PhotoJazz on Twitter says he wears something on his wrist that measures his blood glucose using charged particles. So it looks like you can actually have a device on your wrist or on your body to track things like calories, and that looks like blood and insulin.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy stuff. So thanks to everybody who has experience with this stuff writing in and give us a little better perspective on where this kind of technology is being used and how good it is. Really appreciate that. TNT@twit.tv is always the email address. Well, that's it for the show. Jerry Ellsworth, what a pleasure. Thanks for sharing some time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I had a great time.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Technicalillusions.com. Is that the place for people to learn more about your company and Cast AR?
Correct. We have forums there if you have questions. And check out our Kickstarter, too. We'd really appreciate any help.
Yeah. You've still got a few weeks. November 14th is the last day. So go check it out. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hitting those stretch goals. I hope you get them all. You can submit a story to us if you'd like us to cover it. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is our subreddit. We keep an eye on that. We take it into account when we figure up our lineup every day. You can also email us, as I mentioned, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/technewstoday. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast and get the show notes and all kinds of things at twit.tv/TNT. We will be back tomorrow when it's Wednesday and Jeff Cannata joins us. We'll see you then.